Biden has at times talked tough, and then you hear him say he doesn't want conflict. It's hard for me to imagine how on the path that Russia's on, there wouldn't be conflict. I don't mean armed conflict, but conflict. And there's nothing that came out of the actions taken by the G7 or out of this NATO meeting, the concrete actions that tell us very much about where this whole issue is going, both against China and against Russia.
Nothing came of G7. Nothing comes from the NATO conversations. From our perspective, the United States of America, but if you look at it from the other side, that's Brit Hume, recognizable voice. I look for someday meeting I love Brit Hume. That dude is solid. But look, if you look at it from the opposite, other side of the coin, yeah, from the European perspective, all things are hunky-dory again. The U.S. is weak. You've got a power vacuum. You've got a grandpa that's awake a portion of the day, does some handshaking, maybe takes a photo op. And, well, the cat, the president of the United States, is away, and the European mice are at play. You know, from their perspective, it's all fine. I told you about a poll yesterday. Folks in Europe, it was a Pew research poll saying, yeah, folks in Europe are thinking, Joe Biden, yeah, he's going to do real good compared. Yeah, because you no longer have a leader telling you how it is, and that America is going to think and focus on America, Americans, and you guys need to, you know, ship shape your house as well. You guys need to grow. America strong. You guys are going to be strong, but you guys need to do your own heavy lifting. Hey, welcome to hour one of the Tuesday Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and we're broadcasting the Dana Show today from what I lovingly refer as her Southern Command in Deep South Texas, Rio Grande Valley, Texas, studios of KURV. And if you'd like to join the conversation at any time, the number to call is 844-344-DANA. You need to make it by producer Steve. Other items in the news. I saw this because I'd been mentioning this crazy idea, and I've got, let's see, one of my guests coming up later in the show. We got, I'm going to have the pleasure, looking forward to speaking with Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, because he's talking about, he wants to talk about pressing Sheila Jackson Lee, who's one of the leaders in committee when it comes to crime issues, crime investigation, issues related to crime and law enforcement. Well, he wants to push the issue of holding hearings on the correlation between a spike in crime across the nation, especially in big cities that have been stupid enough to call on defunding their police departments, and actually have passed some of that. So anyway, that's coming up. But since he's a border congressman, man, I want to ask him about my crazy idea. I mean, this is just, you know, talk show host dude on the U.S.-Mexican border. I've been doing this a quarter, you know, century of my life being here on the border. I think I know a little bit about border issues, but he's a border congressman too. And since the border is not being taken care of, you know, I've been floating the idea someone in Congress, someone in D.C. needs to use the I word, just like the Democrats did against Donald Trump, don't you think? At least that would get the attention of media. Maybe might spark a few of those roundtable discussions. And people on the left and apologists and, you know, for Joe Biden, they would guffaw in their, you know, superior, you know, raise pinky, sipping the teacup coffee cup. They would guffaw, think, oh, this is just a political theater on the part of the Republicans. But you got to say something to get the attention of the media to focus on the huge problem that we have right now, which is an absolutely porous border. I got a little stack of some of the press releases. Maybe and this is just from my sector, my neck of the woods, Rio Grande Valley of Texas. I got a little stack of press releases I want to share with you on some of the, let's see, child rapists and Border Patrol catching gang members and child abusers and stash houses, all that stuff. It's every single day the drumbeat goes on. We got a flood of humanity, and we need to wake up the country. And in order to do that, another item I saw in the news today, Congresswoman Ashley Hinson from Iowa, was doing the morning talk circuit, I think, Fox and Friends this morning, wants something called See the Crisis Act, proposing new legislation called See the Crisis Act, which is symbolic legislation. The Republicans are not in power. The power split 50-50 on the Senate side. But you got to write something up like this, introduce it, talk about it, and so that way it generates water cooler conversation within the news networks and news products in this country so we can talk about it. Her proposal, Ashley Hinson, wants to, in essence, defund the vice president of any travel money. So you don't get to visit Europe. You don't get to visit Central America. You don't do any more international travel until you go to the U.S.-Mexican border and go assess for yourself like you did when you were a presidential candidate. Kamala Harris, when she was a presidential candidate, she visited my neck of the woods. She visited the border. She came and saw the crisis on the border, the kids in cages. She was doing, you know, the sign of the cross and being all sacrosanct, saying, our country is better than this. We need to take all these people. They're running from violence. They're running from corruption. They're running from crime. And we need to protect all those people. We need to let them all in. And now that literally she's in charge, she's been christened by her boss, Joe Biden, go address this. She's been MIA on the border for almost 80 days now. She hasn't come to the border. She hasn't come here like she did back then to report on what was going on the border. She hasn't seen any of this. She's just doing kabuki dances in Central America and in Mexico. So Congresswoman Ashley Hinson says, let's work on this. See the Crisis Act. Kamala Harris, you need to visit the border before you get any more money to do any more international travel. I know it's symbolic. Much like I said earlier, the whole I word thing, the impeachment thing, it would be symbolic. You know, it would get nowhere. I just want to arrest the attention of those, you know, as I refer to them, the news guides up in New York. The ones, the assignment editors, the ones who make decisions on putting those panel discussions on, you know, what the problems are, what the solutions are, what the root causes, the cause of the magnet in our country, sucking all those people up to our country. Individuals that are being promoted, pushed by the criminal element, the cartels. They make thousands of dollars per head sometimes, sending illegal immigrants to our country. They made about $5 billion so far, the cartels, and pushing all these people this way. How about we have a blue ribbon panel investigation into the root causes of this mass migration to the U.S., the lax border policies by the Biden administration, and let's examine the calls by some of these Republican lawmakers. You can guffaw all you want all day long. Oh, it's political theater by these Republicans. But let's be a little bit introspective. Might they have a point in the fact that Joe Biden, in essence, literally, with the stroke of a pen, executive action, one of the first things that he did, amigo? Have you been paying attention to the news? He told Immigration and Customs Enforcement to stop deporting. And you know, ICE, of the thousands of people that Immigration Customs Enforcement would need to deport on a monthly basis, they have so few employees, so few agents, officers at ICE. They have to prioritize the, as Donald Trump called them, the bad hombres, the bad dudes, the criminals, the ex-convicts, individuals who just left the penitentiary, maybe individuals who were sent away for child abuse, rape, assault, murder, whatever it was. Maybe they're out now. Maybe they're drunk driving, they kill people. They're out now. Well, they were in the country illegally. They committed crime. They paid their penance. They paid their debt to society, and now they're out. Well, ICE is supposed to round these people up with the assistance of local sheriffs and state agencies. Hold them. You round them up, and you kick them out. Joe Biden says, ICE, you need to stop doing deportations, period. Because ICE has to prioritize who the bad guys are. They can't be out there finding every single college student who overstayed his or her visa past the spring semester, overstayed in this country. They were supposed to go back to, I don't know, a place like China or Pakistan or wherever they came from. They don't have the manpower. They have to prioritize to protect our country. Even that they can't do. So why am I crazy? Why do you call me crazy? I've had some pushback on this. Why do you call me crazy? Saying that some Republican lawmakers need to call for an impeachment of President Biden because he dismantled border security. We did not have hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants flooding across the border. We did, at one point, deport illegal immigrants who were convicted criminals in this country. All that stopped because of Joe Biden. He dismantled the system that returned illegals back to Mexico, no matter where they came from, to get their initial hearing on asylum, a little big screen TV across the border in Laredo, or I guess they had one in San Diego. I know they had one here in Brownsville, Texas as well. But we can't kick criminals out of the country. He dismantled. We can't kick people out of the country. It's open doors at the border. And this policy, the root cause of this mess, is enriching the cartels. I think those are pretty solid points, don't you think? Say, well, I propose that we impeach President Biden for not doing his job. He's the executive. He's the chief executive. He's supposed to be enforcing American law. And on the flip side of that, he's not allowing the enforcement of American law at the border. I think it's pretty simple. I give kudos to Congresswoman Ashley Hinson from Iowa. Thank you, Congresswoman. You're trying. I see her trying more than the Republican Party as a whole. I'd still like to know where the national leadership of the party, maybe the minority leader in the House, I'd like to see a little bit more courage and more oomph, more fight in them. This whole See the Crisis Act that would force, they would dream to force Kamala Harris to come to the border before she gets any more travel money is as symbolic as any of these congressmen who wish to finally secure the border, at least what we had with Donald Trump. Catch and return to Mexico and let ICE deport all the criminals. Sounds pretty simple to me. Just call for the impeachment. It's symbolic, but it starts a conversation. The conversation that is not taking place right now in the... Sometimes I refer to them, the so-called mainstream, because they're more like the dinosaur networks, the cables and ABC, NBC, CBS. But yeah, unfortunately, I do have to admit, they are the mainstream. And they're keeping the electorate, they're keeping citizens in the dark on issues, the issue of important immigration laws that are not being followed. And the invasion that continues at the U.S.-Mexican border. The so-called mainstream is providing a real disservice, and those news gods and those glass towers up in New York, you guys are making some really stupid decisions on what the daily content is, should be, and it's against your own self-interest. It's against our country's self-interest in keeping the American public ignorant as to what's taking place on the border. It's 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez. Dana taking a few days off, and I hope she gets some rest, and you can join the program. You can call 844-344-3262.
Politics, pop culture, and whatever else gets canceled, tossed in a blender, paid for by sponsored hate mail. It's The Dana Show.
From her southern command, Rio Grande Valley, Texas. Hey, we're still on blessed soil. It's Texas. I'm Sergio Sanchez. This is The Dana Show. And you can join the conversation. You make it by Steve, you can make it on the radio. He'll pat you down at 844-344-3262. So on Twitter right now, and Steve gave me the heads up. So there's a little Democrat Party powwow on the Senate floor right now. So I think Mark Warner and Senator Tester, they called in Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. The rogue senators on the Democrat side. Might they be talking about some of that infrastructure spending? I can tell you that in the news today, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, he's a no vote. The way this bipartisan compromise. Some of these senators have come together in agreements, a little north of $1 trillion on infrastructure spending. No new taxes, no raising taxes on industry, no raising taxes on individuals, spread over 5-6 years, about 100-some-odd million extra in spending on infrastructure that already was going to be spent on. Bernie Sanders saying, no, that's not enough socialism. Those are my words. Bernie Sanders, he says, he's not going to vote for this, you know, bipartisan infrastructure proposal that was revealed these past several days. So in a 50-50 Senate, Bernie says no. Well, there you go. You already got two potential no's with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Boy, if he could just be like a fly in the wall or a spider under the table listening into what Mark Warner and Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are talking about right now, about all that infrastructure stuff. All right, Steve, well, let's do some headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Interesting note from the state of Texas. So we were reporting today that Texas banks will be providing cryptocurrency bank services. This was from late last week. I just got word of this. The Department of Banking in Texas saying state chartered banks will be authorized to provide safekeeping services and custody for virtual currencies like Bitcoin and, you know, other things like that. Let's see what else is here. The American Red Cross is saying that there is a severe blood shortage nationwide. If you do blood donations, this might be a good time for you to get out there. From CNN, Christiane Amanpour, she says she's battling ovarian cancer. Just, I don't know what you think about her, but just say a prayer for her. From South Texas, you're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez.
The border crisis is not only endangering our national security, but it is greatly empowering adversaries like communist China and Russia. I'm Sarah Carter. On the latest Sarah Carter Show, I'll also tell you about my interview with the president of Guatemala. And Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany joins me to discuss what he learned about the crisis from his recent visit to the dangerous Darien Gap in Panama. You don't want to miss it. Subscribe to The Sarah Carter Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you're stuck discussing politics with your friends, who's the most informed person in the group? Yep, you are. You're welcome. Listen, follow, subscribe.
In a weekend interview, Vladimir Putin laughed at the suggestion that you had called him a killer. Is that still your belief, sir, that he is a killer? And I'll continue the trend, if you don't mind, of asking a second question. Do you believe if he does agree to cooperate, then what kind of a challenge do you find yourself in? How would you ever trust him? And if Ronald Reagan said trust but verify, what do you say to Vladimir Putin?
Oh, my God. That's a real question.
To answer the first question?
That's a real question.
I'm laughing, too. They actually... Well, look, I mean, he has made clear that the answer is, I believe he is in the past essentially acknowledged that he was, there are certain things that he would do or did do. But look, when I was asked that question on air, I answered it honestly. But it's not much of a, I don't think it matters a whole lot in terms of this next meeting we're about to have.
Walk it back, Joe. Walk it back. Yeah, that's a good question. That's a really, I don't know who that was. That they get the old gold star on the forehead for being an actual journalist and reporter on that one. That he didn't see that curve coming. Yeah, that was a Kamala Harris style uncomfortable laugh. Like, okay, let me pause. Let me think real quick. The few brain cells that are alive between my ears. Let me see what I can conjure up. Because after all, I got a big meeting with Vladimir coming up here pretty soon. Oh, my goodness. It's embarrassing what's taking place. There's several news cuts. I'll save the good stuff for a little later. Because there's several news cuts. And poor Joe Biden. Oh, my goodness. Pray for this dude. After all, he is what it is, amigo. He's the president right now. He's at 1,600... Pennsylvania. This dude is in charge for answering. What was it that Hillary said? That 3 a.m. phone call, right? Or that reporter asking Hillary and Donald Trump, answering the 3 a.m. phone call. That's the dude that you got to wake up. You got to roust up. Hopefully the Prevagen and the Ambien wears off enough for him to understand, Mr. President, we've got this situation. What do we do? Yeah, that's our country. And he represents our country, and he's stumbling and fumbling all the way to the finish line. And Vladimir Putin is next. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and you're listening to The Dana Show from South Texas, or Southern Command. The talk line is 844-344-3262. Stick around. I'll be talking about the push to protect the vote nationwide. And it's taking place state by state, where by our Constitution, it must be preserved at the state level, because that's the way it's written. It's codified in the Constitution. I got Noah Weinrich from Heritage Action. And yes, Heritage Action is the muscle, is the action branch of the much loved Heritage Foundation, trying to preserve liberty in our country. So stick around for that conversation coming up in just a little bit. Senator Ted Cruz in the news past day or so, butting heads with the head of college sports, all these rules related to transgender athletes, and the rules that cause a controversy is, it's not both ways. It's not women who identify as men and would like to compete in male sports. Like, when's the last time, or when's the first time you saw a report that caused a stir of controversy of the physical or strength disparity between the woman and the man when the woman tried to participate in male sports? Where's the cause of things being so unfair that the woman had the advantage, and all these guys that were competing at collegiate sports for scholarships and for, you know, recognition nationwide and all these different titles? When was it's never from the women going to the men's side, right? The concern, especially when it comes to physical sports, the contact sports, I don't know, things like wrestling, for example. And then when it comes to track and field events, where you got high school girls trying to run against boys who have a clear advantage in speed, when you have a college women competing against college men born as men who identify as women but have a clear physical advantage, and let's say, I don't know, it could be high school or college wrestling. It's always when the man identifies as a woman and the rules related to that. It's never the other way around. That by itself is a logical and clear truth, and you think a cemented observation and clarification of the difference between male and women. But NCAA President Mark Emmert and Senator Ted Cruz here in Texas were talking about the whole issue of men, biological men. They were born males. The chromosomes, they're wired that way. You can't change that. You can't, you know, unwire that and rewire into a female, you know, setup. They're wired as males, but they can take hormone suppression, says the NCAA president, Mark Emmert. They can compete from the NCAA stance. And a big thank you to Florida, by the way. Thank you for taking the lead, Florida, and other states that are doing more than Texas and setting an example and a protection for our girls. The president of the NCAA arguing with Senator Ted Cruz this week. Women can compete from his standards. Mark Emmert says women can compete in sports if certain qualifications are met, including testosterone suppression, to create, quote, functional equivalent of a woman, which is fine. But what about all those years that they still develop bone density and muscle mass and physical advantage, height, everything compared to the woman? You can give all the hormone suppression that you want, but if you start at a later age, they're still built the way they are, muscular. Senator Cruz saying, you know, you need to look at other studies. Athletes born males have a physical advantage, will continue to have a physical advantage over females. Let me go to that conversation now. I promised you earlier, the push to protect the American vote continues. I had a chat with Noah Weinrich from Heritage Action. Go ahead, Steve-O. At the state level, lawmakers who wish to protect the integrity of the vote, they're winning. Georgia, Florida. We had some measures, an attempt in Texas as well. Noah Weinrich is with Heritage Action. That's the muscle, that's the action branch from the Heritage Foundation, trying to keep America informed. What else do you see on the landscape when it comes to protecting the vote across the country, Noah?
Thank you for having me.
You bet.
So this week you see a lot of states have already passed election integrity measures. Texas is the big one that's up next, as you well know. Governor Abbott over the weekend signed into law one bill, not the omnibus bill, but a bill to limit Zuckerbucks or the outside private funding of elections administration.
Yeah, that was a flesh great that one out. I did an interview at the local level, and somebody was watching, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, Big Tech, they provided some funding to local county elections offices. Here in Deep South Texas, we had local counties. They took the money. In fact, the money, the grant that they received in one county was larger than the entire budget for their operating year here in Deep South Texas. So flesh that one out. Explain how Mark Zuckerberg and this foundation at Facebook, they were providing this grant money, you know, to help out elections during the COVID season. What did they do?
Yeah, that's right. That's how they pitched it. But a lot of this money didn't go to COVID-related expenditures. It went to essentially get out the vote efforts in heavily Democratic counties. And, you know, there's always the suspicion of influence whenever private money enters the equation. But for the first time, you had Mark Zuckerberg Foundation, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, give out over $400 million across the country to fund election administration. That went to election boards, that went to counties. They used it sometimes for pandemic-related things like PPE or extra poll workers, but a lot of times they used it for get-out-the-vote efforts or voter education efforts, and it was heavily tilted towards Democratic counties. In Texas, it mostly went to places like Houston and Dallas. And so the pattern of giving was suspicious, if nothing else. There's been some research to show that it heavily influenced the vote for Joe Biden. And it seems like that may have been the intent. And so the bill signed by Governor Abbott is intending to limit that private influence. You know, funding elections should be the domain of the government and not outside private foundations or private individuals.
And Florida did something similar. They made sure that county elections offices do not receive any corporate grant money in the future. Their operating budget should be something that's provided by the state, or if they work with the political parties to contract and run their elections. Is that what they did in Florida and in Texas?
That's right. That's Florida, Georgia, Arizona, Texas, and it's moving in other states as well, because this happened in pretty much every state across the country to varying degrees. There's a bill in Wisconsin, actually, that was just signed by the assembly that's going to go to the governor's desk, where we hope he'll sign it, but not holding up too much hope there. And so now Democrats at the national level are using these efforts to push their For the People Act, which is their federal election takeover. And that's why you see Texas Democrat lawmakers flying up to the White House. They're meeting with congressional lawmakers. They're meeting with Pelosi today. They're meeting with Kamala Harris tomorrow to try and not only block Texas legislation, but advance the For the People Act at the national level.
Summarize for our working people tuning in right now. Summarize the For the People, this HR 1, this Senate 1, the federalization, the attempt to federalize what is a state function, which is running the elections.
There's a number of provisions. One of them, one of the most egregious, would essentially override current voter ID laws. It would say that if you show up without a voter ID, you can still vote using a provisional ballot, or you just have to sign your name to prove your identity. Another one would be forcing every state to allow felons to vote, no matter what felony they may have committed. If they committed murder, they would still be allowed to vote as long as they're not currently sitting in prison. And that would just trample on the rights of states to determine their own elections, their own times, place, manners of elections, like the Constitution says. And it would mean that Congress would be running our elections instead of our state legislatures and secretaries of state.
I appreciate the work at Heritage Action, Noah. Tell folks how they can help you and your team to keep American voters informed as to what's taking place at State House and in Washington when it comes to these election reforms.
Absolutely. For updates, just go to saveourelections.com or text ACTION to 51776. That's ACTION to 51776 or saveourelections.com to find out more about how you can help in Texas to get this legislation across the finish line and block this disastrous bill at the federal level that would take over our election.
Thank you, Noah, for what you do at Heritage Action. We'll keep in touch.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Heritage Action is the muscle. It's the action branch of the Heritage Foundation. That's Noah Weinreich. And much like you can support the Heritage Foundation, you can also support this independent, different branch. It's a different arm. Heritage Action. Maybe give them some support. That way they can increase the personnel and researchers and maybe put some boots on the ground. Tell you what, the left, thanks to big tech, Mark Zuckerberg, all the billions of dollars and millions of dollars provided by all the left of center mindset individuals in corporate America who are working against America in their own self-interest, promoting leftist ideology. The left is well-funded and they got plenty of boots on the ground nationwide. We have a few organizations, among them Heritage Action. So give them some support. That way they can continue. For example, one thing they're doing is try to protect the vote nationwide, state by state, getting the word out because, well, as I told you at the beginning, the news gods of the glass towers in New York, they're distracting the American public with other meaningless, useless information. You're listening to The Dana Show. Dana is off this week. You got me. I'm Sergio Sanchez. And you can join us online at danaradio.com.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's Chapter and Verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
From The Dana Show, Southern Command in the Rio Grande Valley, Texas, still on blessed soil. This is The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and you got me this week because Dana needs some time off. She needs to sleep and get some rest and take care of business, and then she'll be joining us, Lord willing, sometime next week. And bringing aboard, I understand, a whole, like a big bunch of new radio stations. Lots of family joining The Dana Show next week. So she'll give you information on that. We have a lot of news today. The Attorney General unveiling a new Biden push to counter the number one threat to our country, aside from global warming, cooling, climate change, whatever it is. Domestic terrorism, you know. So I'm getting my notes together on that one. I'll share that with you next hour. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is in the news. If you have not heard, she's back in the news. But I was scouring the networks and the Twitter feed. I didn't see much on this. Had she said something controversial or something that the left could run with and make a big stink of? Well, I don't think she's trending because she's apologizing. She's, unlike the left, unlike the squad, if anyone on the squad says something, you know, racist or anti-Semitic, and don't ever expect an apology from them. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's apologizing. So I guess that's why she's not trending right now that much. She is, but not as I would have expected. Unless she popped up recently, I haven't seen the numbers. Marjorie Taylor Greene, she would be the, you know, a.k.a. the pinata in Congress for the left. Showing some, showing remorse, genuine remorse for comparing the coronavirus restrictions, you know, wearing a mask, the mandate wearing a mask while in Congress, comparing all that to the Holocaust. Marjorie Taylor Greene said yesterday that she actually went to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. And if you haven't been there, you should. And you should take your kids with you. I've been there, and, you know, be prepared to face and see pictures and reminders of the darkest tendencies in humanity, the hate that exists. It's still within flawed human beings. But the Holocaust Museum she visited is right there. She apologized or her words and said that she understands why what she said was offensive, was out of line, comparing the mask restrictions to the Holocaust. She got to see for herself what the real Holocaust is. Declare there's nothing that compares to the Holocaust. Marjorie Taylor Greene said that she wanted to acknowledge that she was wrong because her father always taught her to own up to her mistakes. Well, good for the congressman. And again, I'm not expecting this to be top of the hour news because she did what is right. Stick around. Got conversations about Afghanistan. I've been waiting for NATO to say something about the U.S. and NATO forces leaving. What about all those people that helped them? What happens to them? When is that subject going to come up? From South Texas, I'm Sergio Sanchez. This is The Dana Show.
Yes, well, I think we got a pretty good grip on the virus and on the vaccination. We were really, really doing very well in South Carolina, but seems like most everybody's been to the border except the vice president, and she's the one in charge of it.
Yeah, that's Henry McMaster, South Carolina governor. Yeah, spot on. I think the whole COVID thing, and thanks to President Donald Trump, don't you think? President Donald Trump and the warp speed, a little task force of his for COVID. We got ourselves not one, not two. We got three and maybe more vaccines on the way and plenty of treatments to take care of COVID. In fact, so much so, one of the headlines today is, speaking of Kamala Harris, our vice president, and the illegal immigration, Biden border mess. I mean, what do you call it? She's the border czar. Ben was assigned to do this about almost 80 days ago and still hasn't shown up to the border. When she went to Mexico and spoke with AMLO, the president down there, she promised 1.3 million doses of access vaccine. So, yeah, this whole thing about the vaccine and the push, whoever wanted it and wants it, got it already. And we have access and we have so much so, and we're giving it to Mexico now. Compliments of U.S. taxpayers like you and yours truly and everybody else working for a living tuning into The Dana Show right now. Happy Tuesday, amigo. My name is Sergio Sanchez, and we're broadcasting The Dana Show from what I call her Southern Command right here in South Texas. Still Texas, still blessed soil, land of liberty. And if you'd like to join the program, the only rule is you need to make it by Steve, producer Steve, at 844-344-DANA. Speaking of the vice president, you know, I found out that today was the 9th anniversary of the DACA program. You know, that what is it? The Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals, Deferred Action Childhood Arrivals, the DACA program. You know, the folks, illegal immigrants who brought their kids and their kids grew up in America and some of them don't even speak Espanol or Mandarin or whatever it is, whatever country they came from, and their parents came here illegally, no fault of their own. I know that the overwhelming majority of America, they empathize. They want something to help these folks. They grew up as American kids. They grew up in American schools, high schools. They have that American culture and every. They are in essence Americans. So they grew up as that. You know, 70% of Republicans want some help for this class that was created by the Obama administration, this DACA program that he created, this DACA class, which was supposed to be like 700,000, 800,000, maybe a million folks that as kids, they were brought to this country. They're in the country legally. They need some work permit to get by, to stay in this country. And well, today's the 9th anniversary of that DACA program. So another photo op, another opportunity. Instead of coming to the border, Vice President Kamala Harris in the news today because she's going to have a sit down on this 9th anniversary of this DACA program, which, look, in my opinion, for all the talk about protecting these so-called dreamers, and I say so-called because I want protection for them, but I want the borders secure. I want immigration policy perfected to the point where it is not abused by individuals who are economic migrants, by cartels who push economic migrants toward our country. and tell them, you go there, especially go there with a kid, you can stay. Just say credible fear. You can manipulate, abuse the asylum system, the asylum policies. I want all that fixed. When you say the words, if anyone, you guys on the left, you say comprehensive immigration reform, okay, I'll give you that. Donald Trump was willing to give you that. He wanted $25 billion compared to what we're spending these days. $25 billion is chump change. That's not even a rounding error compared to the, where are we now? $6 trillion plus dollars in federal spending for the COVID season, and we're still at it. We're still full throttle. Just throw some more IOUs, suitcases full of IOUs on the fire, muchachos. Let's keep going. $25 billion, not even a rounding error. $6 plus trillion and counting, because they're still talking about infrastructure, trillion plus infrastructure up in D.C. Donald Trump wanted $25 billion to build a wall. Build a wall where it was necessary to build a wall. The Southwest, at the Southwest border, whatever it took, double ply, triple ply, much higher, all the way to San Diego, going into the ocean, going into the Pacific. Down at the Texas border where the Rio Grande River, the natural border, really doesn't exist. There's hardly anything there. Put a wall there based on what Border Patrol wanted, based on what Border Patrol says. You know, the experts in capturing illegal immigrants, Border Patrol, where they constantly are out there in the wilderness. Let them tell you where they want the wall so they can siphon the traffic in their direction. They can arrest these individuals and process, do their job. Donald Trump wanted $25 billion for the wall or portions of the wall, whatever was necessary. You know, he was willing to provide the DACA community citizenship, a path to citizenship, which was more than what I was hoping. I just wanted these people protected through no fault of their own. They grow up as Americans because their parents are the illegal immigrants. Their parents broke the law. Their parents skipped the line. They broke immigration, American immigration law. And by the way, watch what the high court said in a unanimous decision from the temporary protected status individuals. It was a unanimous decision that told them they don't get a green card. American law has to be changed. Now the onus is on Congress to provide even a greater fix. How does this, because they're kind of similar. We're talking about illegal immigrants from Central America, from Syria, from other portions of the world. They were a protected class that came here and received a temporary protected status in our country, but they crossed the border illegally. The high court said, you cross the border illegally, you don't get a work permit. In essence, what I was hoping was simply for the DACA community, as kids, they were brought here illegally. They grew up, they played high school football. Maybe they were in the band. They were in the cheer squad. They thought they were American citizens. And then mama and papa told them, no, mijito, no, mi, sorry. Yeah, you don't have the papers to live in this country. What can you imagine? I don't even want to take my mind there. It's a nightmare. Thinking that the country, the culture, the neighborhood, everything, their world just crumbles. I want these folks protected. 70% of Republicans want the protections. But we need to fix border policy, border law, and this is the work of Congress. We need to fix this so we do not create another DACA community. See, this is the madness. We're lost in this vicious cycle, administration after administration, Congress after Congress. We're stuck in this vicious cycle. Donald Trump said, give me $25 billion because they hated Trump. They hated the Dreamers along with him. I say the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, they did not give Trump what he wanted. He was willing to give citizenship, which is more than I was hoping. I was just hoping for a work permit. The work permit that the high court now has said, for example, another class, the temporary protected class, they don't have a right to. So what does that say about the DACA class? What, they don't have a right to a green card as well, a worker permit? So where does the hot potato fall again? Back to the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. the lawmakers. Again, the big problem in our country that's not getting addressed. It's just getting lip service. Kamala Harris sitting down with the Dreamers today, just yucking it up in committee, talking about the hopes and dreams of the Dreamers. So-called Dreamers. And I say so-called Dreamers because all American kids, every single baby born in this country, all our children, all of them are Dreamers. Let me share with you a little. I told you I had some small stack of the headlines. And this is a small stack compared to the large stack of headlines still being produced by Border Patrol all across the Southwest border. I know it's not part of the news cycle that you receive, so you're welcome. I'm going to give you an example of what's taking place at my border. This is just my border right here. We got criminal illegal aliens being caught. Laredo, Del Rio, El Paso, Phoenix area, keep going west, all the way to San Diego, California. So in my sector, they announced yesterday, Border Patrol, Rio Grande Valley sector, arrested an MS-13 gangster. And I've never heard this word, Tango Blast gang member. That's a new one. That's Tango Blast. Actually, that kind of sounds... kind of sounds delicious. It reminds me of that orange juice, Tango Blast gang member. So a few days back, folks in Kingsville, north of us, they took a MS-13 gang member into custody, tried to conceal himself inside a vehicle, caught another gang member, two gang members, plus a sexual predator. And these are the individuals that Border Patrol actually caught. Going back to what I was talking about last hour, we got criminals coming into this country on a day-to-day basis, compliments of Biden border policy. Biden border policy that has told ICE you cannot kick criminals out of this country. You have those criminals in custody, individuals that were sent to jail for awful crime. They need to be kicked out. Joe Biden says no more deportations. And Joe Biden, with this lax border policy, everybody comes in and anybody can stay and just claim asylum. This is creating the magnet. They're coming up here. Border Patrol is only catching a few of them. Imagine those individuals that are not being caught by Border Patrol. It's called the I word, impeachment. Republicans in Congress use it. You know, the chief executive is not doing his job, not executing, not making sure American border law is properly enforced. Just a thought. You got plenty of talking points that you could use. Just a thought if you want the publicity. Just a final note before I go pay some bills. You know, in Texas, we've got the electric grid manager, ERCOT. It's the Electric Reliability Council, which, again, doesn't seem to be that reliable. We've been told across Texas. I thought I'd let you know because, in my opinion, this issue has political implications. It reverberates. It scares me. ERCOT, the electric grid manager, the people that were in the news back in February when we lost power in the state of Texas because of the big freeze and we had frozen fuel lines and all that. And half of Texas, it seemed like half of the Texas population was without power at one point. We were going to lose the electric grid. All that happened, the state legislature just passed a few laws here and there. They changed the makeup, make sure it's just Texans on the ERCOT board, and they did a few other changes. All I want to say about this, and because I know they're listening in Austin, Dallas, and other places, all these lawmakers, you guys need to do something special session. And I know in Texas they're going to have another special session. Do it to make sure to provide the proper backup till we keep the lights on. Right now, we are on watch. In Texas, we have this ERCOT electric grid watch. We're on notice to conserve power because it's super hot and everybody's running their air conditioner at 69, 70 degrees. They're telling people, run it at 78, 80, please. We don't want to lose power. Why are we back in a situation where we might lose power? Did we not learn anything back in February that we need the proper backups? I know that in the state of Texas, leadership, lawmakers, they did not follow a suggestion, for example, like Warren Buffett. This dude wanted to invest like $9 billion worth of infrastructure. Let me build some natural gas-powered electric generators. You guys pay us back slowly, bit by bit, as you use it, just as a backup. None of that is what's been fixed. I'm just warning you. I'm warning state leadership, political leadership. You're on the watch. we get the lights pulled again, we are teeter-tottering on purple, people. The only thing that we have super red as far as Republican leadership in Texas, we want to say, oh, Texas is Republican. No, we ain't. We're purple. Look at all the cities. We are teeter-tottering. You allow the lights to go off in Texas one more time, they're going to pull the plug politically on the Republican Party in this state. It goes blue. And when Texas goes blue, Lord help our nation. That's all I have to say. It's 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, broadcasting today from her Southern Command in South Texas.
Now more than ever, it's vital to support companies and organizations that share your values. And Patriot Mobile is calling all patriots. Switch to Patriot Mobile today. Bring your own phone and you'll get 50% off your first 2 months plus a free Patriot starter kit. And for a limited time, enter the Be a Patriot promotion to win a free phone and cellular service for life. Simply donate to one of Patriot Mobile's participating charities, send in your thoughts on what it means to be a patriot, or switch your service to a Patriot Mobile plan. With the broadest nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget and great multi-line discounts. Switching is easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call their U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Veterans and first responders save even more, so make the switch today. Get the discount, free starter kit, and enter the Be a Patriot promotion for a chance to win using the offer code Dana. A full list of rules is available at patriotmobile.com/Dana. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT.
Red meat, black coffee, truth telling. The Dana Show.
I'm Sergio Sanchez in for my friend Dana Lash all week. Appreciate you checking in. Hey, stick around. My conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott from St. Mary's University is an expert in terrorism issues. He's been watching the Afghan engagement for a long time. Just his comments on what I was hoping to hear from President Biden or NATO on, look, I know we're leaving, but I still would like to know what the plan is when it comes to all those people who depended on us, still depend on us, who helped our government in. I know the new Afghan government that's not going to last very long. What of that? Have you heard anything? I haven't. I haven't seen any mention whatsoever at NATO on post-NATO, post-U.S. Afghanistan. And all these people, the translators and teachers, all those people who helped out. Now, that's coming up in just a little bit. All right, Steve, well, let's do some headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Inflation, big problem right now. We're talking about numbers we've never seen before. We are not used to inflation in our country, not like this. So the producer price index from May, at least this reading, numbers that they've never seen before, 6.6% inflation over the past 12 months. And I can only hope and pray that maybe we can tap the brakes on that. This inflation issue that's going into raw materials like wood, for example. This is the reason that despite the fact that we have a solid real estate market right now, confidence in from U.S. home builders, you know, the people that need to buy the wood and hire all these people and buy all the nails and hammers, everything else, to, you know, part of the economic growth, the confidence by U.S. home builders is dropping to a 10-month low. Yes, raw material inflation is specifically the price of wood. You're listening to The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You want to join the conversation? 844-344-3262.
Your one-stop shop for the information you need to fight back. If you're going to have to learn stuff, you might as well enjoy it. The Dana Show.
Navalny's death would be another indication that Russia has little or no intention abiding by basic fundamental human rights. It would be a tragedy. It would do nothing but hurt his relationships with the rest of the world, in my view, and with me.
How? I mean, what are you going to do, Mr. President? In the few moments that you're awake during the day, to actually think something through, hopefully. What do you do? What can you do? Nothing. Nothing. I know what you and your people did to get Vladimir Putin to sit down and talk with you. You approved help approve that pipeline. You gave your blessing to that pipeline from Russia down to Europe. Make him happy. Make Vladimir happy to come sit down with you starting, what is it, tomorrow? Welcome to the Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez in for Dana this week. Get some rest, my friend. And she'll be back with us, Lord willing, sometime next week and onboarding a whole bunch of new radio stations on the Dana Show. I mean, she's probably like, I think by now, probably the biggest show. Noontime. We broadcast the Dana Show noon to 3 Eastern. So I know you guys hear it at different times, but hopefully you guys can onboard here and take us live in the near future. You want to join the program, 844-344-3262. It's opening day in California. Did you know that? Like I was looking at the pile of business news for today, and they're happy celebrating, for example, up in New York, where you got Governor Cuomo. He shouldn't be there, in my opinion. First of all, not because of the multiple accusations, the allegations of improper behavior. All these women, you know, they went from 3 to 5 to 6, 7, 8, 9. It doesn't matter. I told you he's not going to quit, and they can't get rid of him unless they vote him out. And the only reason that he's facing any political opposition up in New York is, for example, the lefty attorney general up in New York, the state of New York, likely has sights on becoming governor, is going after him. That's the only, it's political infighting, Democrat Party infighting up in New York. I mentioned him because it just rubbed me wrong. Listening to Andrew Cuomo and all the news cuts from today and overnight and yesterday, and he's promoting tourism again after the iron-fisted, heavy-handed policy shutting everything down and throwing Lord knows how many thousands of businesses in New York State out of business, mom-and-pop shops and restaurants. This paternal, this daddy state that said, no, you can't bring people in to dine inside, even though it's like 0 degrees outside. All just stupid policies. Now he's celebrating business. Now he's celebrating tourism. And they're celebrating 70% vaccination up in New York and trying to make a go at it, trying to tell people they're opening up in New York. He's still there. He's not going anywhere. He shouldn't be there, not because of the accusation, allegations against. He shouldn't be there because of his awful deadly management. I could use another word, but I'll use the word deadly. Deadly management of COVID policy in the state. All these, Lord knows how many thousands of elderly that died in New York State, because of his directive sending COVID patients, March of last year, sending COVID patients straight into nursing homes to spread the COVID pixie dust to all these most vulnerable elderly people in New York. So that's why he shouldn't be there. He had sycophant media and news people carrying the water for him, trying to sell books. It's ridiculous. Attorney General Merrick Garland unveiling a Biden push to combat domestic terrorism. That, amigo, that's the big problem. That's the biggest threat. That's the biggest enemy against our nation. Domestic terrorism, says the Attorney General. Merrick Garland spoke at the Justice Department. You got a quote on that one? Go ahead, Steve. We'll play that one real quick.
The number of open FBI domestic terrorism investigations this year has increased significantly. According to an unclassified summary of the March intelligence assessment, the two most lethal elements of the domestic violence extremist threat are racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists and militia violent extremists. In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
Which means, and again, the Justice Department and investigators can choose what to investigate, what to pursue. They're not pursuing any of the riots, the looting, the arson from the Black Lives Matter, the Antifa-fueled and supported violence from a year ago, American cities downtown burning all over the place. They're not investigating that. That's not the domestic terrorism. He's referring to anyone with a right of center or very right of center, almost anarchist, like leave me alone, leave me the hell alone attitude. militia mindset, libertarian mindset. They've mentioned the word libertarian as being a potential threat to our country. He says he wants to address the root causes of the violence. That's one of the comments that he said. Look, unless they believe climate change is one of the root causes, I mean, what else are they referring to? But individuals who might otherwise be described as conservative, independent-minded individuals who don't want the government telling them what to do. They don't want the government limiting liberty, silencing their voice, taking their guns away, taking their property away, taking their wealth away. Yeah, that's the biggest threat. That's the biggest threat. That's what they have chosen at the Merrick Garland Justice Department to investigate. And they've increased because they've increased those investigations. They haven't done the whole Black Lives Matter Antifa investigation. And under this administration, they never will. All right, amigo. Talk about threats, Islamic terrorism. I don't know. Maybe they'll have a base of operation and training camp again in Afghanistan, because that Western-backed, U.S.-backed government, you know it's going to crumble like a house of cards. I had a conversation about this issue that is absent in NATO talks, U.S. talks with the allies. They haven't brought this issue up, and we're less than 90 days away from full extraction, from leaving Afghanistan to crumble and fall and have the Taliban take over. My conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Endicott. Go ahead, Steve-O.
So the Pentagon is, they're still debating what to do as far as airstrikes in Afghanistan once U.S. troops pull out. There was an initial report saying, yeah, they'll use airstrikes to support the government. And the most recent report yesterday is that, no, they won't, unless they're taking out known terrorists. Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Endicott, St. Mary's University. He's an expert when it comes to anti-terrorism efforts in our country. I want to get your quick opinion on the back and forth right now at the Pentagon, whether they should or should not do airstrikes after everybody from the U.S. is gone.
Yeah, you know, first of all, the Pentagon has contingency plans for all sorts of things. So this is not unusual that they'd be contemplating, you know, what will happen if, you know, a terror cell pops back up when we leave or the Taliban comes back into power. So in my personal opinion, of course, the red line that we should look at is not whether you have some terrorist here or there or the Taliban takes over the country, which they will. It's whether or not the Taliban government is going to allow these training camps to be reestablished on their territory, as we saw before 9/11, when they allowed al-Qaeda to train over 60,000 people in these terror camps. That's really the red line. If they're doing that, then we need to take decisive military action, not just some drone strikes.
Do you know what NATO's going to do after the U.S. leaves? I mean, we're packing up and leaving on a daily basis from Afghanistan. Are they going to stick around?
No. They're heading out the door. In fact, most of them are already gone as soon as the Biden administration signaled that they're going to leave without any conditions. And this is part of the problem is, you know, the Trump administration, of course, had a peace plan that they put into effect, but it was condition-based. In other words, the Taliban had to negotiate with the government that exists now in the capital city. That stopped. As soon as Biden came into office, those talks abruptly ended. The Trump administration also made it very clear that we would respond with overwhelming military force if the Taliban, you know, started to house or to sponsor terrorist activities. The Biden administration basically said, we're leaving. We don't care what the conditions are. September the 11th, which is a strange day to pick, we're out. And again, whether you're a liberal or conservative, and I'm a conservative, by the way, we all know it's going to happen when we leave Afghanistan, whether it's this year or 100 years from now. The Taliban will take over that country again. And I think the issue is not that we're going to have to stay there to make sure the Taliban doesn't return to power. It's we want to make sure that the Taliban is not a safe haven for al-Qaeda-type groups that want to attack us. That's unacceptable. The fact that the country is going to go back into Sharia law, an extreme version where everything we hold dear in this country, our Bill of Rights, are disregarded in that country. You know, I feel for those people, but it's not our job to stay there and garrison that country indefinitely.
Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Endicott, my guest. You know what I find surprising, Colonel, is that these NATO meetings taking place, I haven't heard a single peep, any commentary from any of these nations, not even Joe Biden, on what happens to the interpreters, to the Kabul government employees, those who were teaching little girls how to read and write. You know the Taliban's gunning for them as soon as they get into Kabul and start tearing everything up. They're going to start killing all these people. I haven't heard NATO say anything about extracting, protecting any of these people as they leave.
You're right. And there's a couple of congressmen that have introduced bills to try to get these individuals' visas to lawfully come into our country. How about that? And, you know, those are the people we should take care of and go to the front of the lawful line.
And they don't all need to come to the U.S., Colonel. That's the reason I mentioned NATO. Is you'd think, you know,
yeah,
the German,
right.
Somebody would step up and take some of these folks in, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we should take our share, but other countries should do so as well, because these people, if the Taliban comes back into power, they will be executed. There's no question about it. They're ruthless. You know, set of individuals that they will execute them. It's kind of like what we're going to see, in my opinion, is, you know, what happened in 1970s when North Vietnam came in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a massive killing is going to take place, and the communists took over the country, even though they swore they wouldn't. But the difference is, of course, North Vietnam is not trying to attack the United States. That's the key function. Will the Taliban, you know, understand that there's a price to be paid, and that price, of course, would be we would re-enter with overwhelming force, not do drone strikes here and there, like President Trump did with ISIS. That's how you deal with them, and that's just the nature of the world. I mean, war will never end, and we just need to make it clear to our adversaries that there's a cost to be paid, and that we will use our military in a way that's designed to be used, and that is to defend ourselves and then leave. You know, the Trump administration, they didn't have this idea that we need to stay and have long hot showers with other countries indefinitely in a state of conflict. And I think that's the right approach myself, personally.
Not enough is said of what the Trump administration did. Release the hounds. He let the generals take care of ISIS. What did President Trump do to erase ISIS? Behind the scenes, U.S. forces and friends, they took care of business.
Yeah, well, what he did is just, you know, fundamentally logical, which, of course, seems to escape many people in this country today. Logic and reason is just out the window there. It's all about feeling things. Trump said, here's the goal. I want to geographically obliterate them from the face of the earth. The generals, and this is the first weekend of his administration, they said, we want two things. One, we want to get rid of the supercilious rules of engagement that tie our hands behind our back. And two, we want violence, the authority to do violence on the enemy, delegated down to the company level, not kept way up in the higher headquarters level. And Trump said, done. And he unleashed the dogs of war. And with our military, we used OPM, other people's money. We used ground troops that were available. But our Green Berets, our Special Forces, Navy SEALs, and our air power, we obliterated them and we accomplished the mission. And today we've seen, you know, in this country today, radical Islamic extremism is still the number one terror threat, despite the propaganda from the administration about white supremacists. But they've been reduced.
Oh, and don't forget climate change is also the big threat. Don't forget that one, as Joe Biden said.
Well, you know, that's the media quickly corrected President Biden when he was over there. He used the term global warming.
Yeah.
And
No.
We're going to switch that because global warming has been disproved. Because Al Gore, when he screamed and yelled some decade ago, predicted by this time basically we'd be underwater. So because global warming is no longer verified by the facts, they switch it to climate change, which is brilliant because too cold climate change, too hot climate change, whatever the weather is, you blame it on climate change. But I do not personally believe in man-made global warming. If the climate changes, the climate changes.
It always does. It always does. All right.
All the weather.
Yeah. 10-4. Yeah. Not even the weather guys can get it right. Thank you, Colonel. Always a pleasure speaking with you. From St. Mary's University, San Antonio, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Atticott.
Reminds me of a picture I saw from the just concluded G7. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. If it's like Carbis Bay. Anyway, it's the G7 leaders. And the water level, a picture of 1925 compared to a picture right now, 2021, the water level exactly the same. They had the sea right behind them. Yeah. How's that whole climate change, sea level rising thing going for you? This is the Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You can join the conversation at 844-344-3262. Stick around. Got Florida Man up next.
Shooting down woke culture one crazy headline at a time. It's the Dana Show.
I'm Sergio Sanchez in for my friend Dana Lash. Appreciate you checking in. You want to say hi online. We're kind of all forced to do the Twitter and Facebook thing until
I'm hoping and praying former President Donald Trump and billionaire amigos come together and create a new platform. But on Twitter, it's at Sergio Talk, at Sergio Talk. And on Facebook, just look for Sergio Sanchez and little porthole, you know, that little circle there. Just look for something related to cystic fibrosis. All right, Steve, well, let's do some Florida Man.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right. Well, one good note from Florida. I'm going to save the good note at the end. Let me get the other weird stuff out of the way. This one, the victim in the following story and the alleged conspirator or attacker or the guy who actually paid somebody to attack the woman, they got a kid together. Yeah, so talk about bad decisions. So this Florida guy, a Florida man accused of paying $100 to a homeless guy to slash his girlfriend's face. This guy, the boyfriend, placed a GPS tracker on the woman's vehicle, figured out where she was working, drove the homeless guy, paid him $100 at a parking garage to ambush his girlfriend. And she got cut pretty bad, like from throat to ear, from nose down to cheek, wound up in the hospital. Police say this guy, the boyfriend who paid to have her slashed, spent time in the hospital, 35-year-old. He spent time in the hospital with her just to see if she was doing okay. Alexis Colon is his name. That's an interesting name. Colon, 35-year-old. Colon's so nice, they named him twice. And on Interstate 75, if you ever get hit by lightning, I guess the vehicle to be in would be a Nissan Rogue. Some guy saying he was hit by lightning, 11:20 in the morning on the interstate. The electricity fried every electrical system in his vehicle. He's okay. The lightning strike caused a 7-foot-long, 4-inch-wide gouge in the interstate. It's that powerful, and he survived. Okay, now the good news for Florida. You guys doing it right, the whole COVID thing. Universal Orlando announcing they're lifting all capacity restrictions at their theme park in Orlando. From South Texas, I'm Sergio Sanchez. This is The Dana Show.
The Republican Party is vastly diminished in numbers. The leadership of the Republican Party is fractured. And the Trump wing of the party is the bulk of the party, but it makes up a significant minority of the American people. And we'll see. We'll see.
I wouldn't call 75 million, a solid, unquestionable 75 million votes for Donald Trump. What word did he use? Significant minority? What's significant? All right, you better pay attention to that significant number. That's, you know, fractured? I don't think so. There was another headline. By the way, welcome to hour three of The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, and for my friend Dana Lash, you got me this week, amigo. And we're broadcasting from the Dana Show Southern Command in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas in the studios of KURV Radio. You want to say hi online? Yeah, unfortunately, we got to do the Twitter thing and the Facebook thing. It's Sergio Sanchez on Facebook. I look for the little portal that says something about cystic fibrosis. And on Twitter, it's at Sergio Talk. I was reading an earlier report on the Republicans who voted. I mean, based on what President Biden was saying about the Republicans being fractured and leadership being fractured and this, what I gather from what he was saying is that the Republican, you know, it's a minority. It's 75 million people. And the vote that he got, and Joe Biden got, was an anti-Trump vote. And it was, I think it was a minority within the Republican Party, a minority within for example, they created these people with a lot of money and a lot of influence, the establishment Republicans, the ones who got their, you know, apple cart turned over by Donald Trump because he showed them who's boss in the Republican Party. And he's a bull in a china shop, which I wish we'd still have that bull, because we'd be taking the china shop right now to town as far as figuring out where the COVID vaccine came from, the COVID virus came from the Wuhan lab.
But that's another point. I like to think that it's a small group within the Republicans. For example, these people that created that Lincoln Day project, that Lincoln Project to get rid of Donald Trump. Traitors. And when I say traitors, I say traitors to the values that they represented or they claim to have represented or led. They you know, Michael Steele, he's the poster child in my mind. Michael Steele, the former Republican Party chairman, traitor, absolutely a traitor to what he professed to represent as the leader of the Republicans, a chairman for the Republican Party at one time. Man, I don't get out very much to go. I might go to the CPAC thing up in Dallas if I get a chair to do my dog and pony show up there. But that's probably the only place I might see someone like that. But I've often thought, man, I'm glad I'm not in these circles because I'm right in his face. I'd call him a traitor, Michael Steele. And all those individuals did that Lincoln Project, that John Wilkes Booth Project. And I'm harsh on Michael Steele because he should have known better. He hated Donald Trump so much. I don't know what it was. Maybe that, what, did Donald Trump not give him a gig within the administration? That's why he was upset with him? Michael Steele professed to, you know, he professed limited government at one time as a Republican leader, as the chairman. He professed his support for a right to life, defending the unborn. You name it. Low corporate taxation, allowing the engine of capitalism to thrive and to invest and to profit. And all these ideas that he, as chairman of the Republican Party, he put all that aside because his hate of Donald Trump was so large, so big, he could not overcome that. And he was one of he was like the main voice there for a while. I remember that audio from him right before the election going against Donald Trump. It's like, my goodness, I don't understand those people. Remains to be seen how much power influence. I was telling you, I was reading earlier today, those Republicans who voted on that quick impeachment, that rapid fire impeachment at the end and even after the Trump administration. Remember January 6th, a bunch of idiots going to Washington, D.C., thinking they could somehow slam the brakes on the processes and everything had been agreed to by the Electoral College. Everybody certified their vote. And everybody was going through the song and dance, and they had to approve in our system, in our Electoral College system. It's a done deal. At court, they failed everywhere, but yet you had a bunch of individuals who went up there and made a mess of things. January 6th. Just completely ignorant when it comes to the political processes in this country. So you had a group of Republicans, what was it, like 10, 11 of them, who in that rapid fire impeachment of Donald Trump voted against Donald Trump, blamed Donald Trump, blamed the president for inciting this riot, inciting this. No, he didn't. They didn't even bother listening to the words of what he said. But all these individuals, every single one of them, I understand, is facing a primary challenge. So it remains to be seen. And of course, there's a lot of forces that go that are at play here. The quality of the candidate or the candidates that try to unseat in their respective primaries. It's got to be somebody who's well-known, maybe a political figure for several years, someone that has perhaps a bit of success. But the way these individuals, those 10, 11 Republicans who voted against Donald Trump in that rapid-fire impeachment after his presidency was done, trying to impeach Donald Trump, they're probably going to be primaried by several individuals. So they're probably going to do their elections, go to runoff. And I would hope, from my perspective, because we always need new leadership. We always need new ideas. We benefit as a nation if we get new people in there all the time. We have a system that allows voters, Northern California and Nancy Pelosi's district, they should have sent her home a long time ago. In New York, Chuck Schumer, you know, graduated college, goes into politics. He's been on the public dole pretty much his entire life since, what, the 70s. Joe Biden, the same thing. My goodness. Whose fault is that? The fact that these fools, and I say that respectfully, because the ideas that they take to Washington, they're foolish ideas against the best interest of our nation, of our citizens. But because they have the power and they know that they are dug into that power and they've got their base of support, that's a fraction of the voting base. It's a money base, a power base. Whose fault is it that they keep going to Washington, D.C.? It's the voters in those districts, the voters in those states. It's, in the end, it's the citizens, and it's the inactive, politically inactive citizens and the politically ignorant citizens in our country. That's why it's so important to be involved. And thank God for this country. Thank God for this opportunity that you and I can talk about politics without fear of any, you know, black suited individual with dark sunglasses coming and whisking us away and taking us to a gulag somewhere. This, you and I are free to vote these people out. And unless you actually get in there, and like I've been telling you for many days, every time I get a chance to fill in for Dana, working and talking to you as someone who worked as a Republican chairman here in Deep South Texas, try to create some political competition. You need to understand the systems that are at play. You need to understand how to run an election, work an election, how to count the early vote, the mail-in vote, all those things. Learn the processes. That way, courageously, maybe you can run for office at school board, city council, county, state, and eventually create a bullpen of new ideas, a bullpen of political competition to call those new pitchers up to Washington, D.C. It remains to be seen if any of these incumbents who voted against Donald Trump will be primaried out, but they are going to have, I would hope that they have many courageous citizens who stand up and say, it's time for you to come home. You don't represent us. And that goes for all districts, by the way. It's up to voters. We don't need term limits. It's sad to think, well, that's just one of those issues I wrestle with. You know, every time I say that we don't need term limits, you know, the first thing that always pops into my head. But technically, we don't need term limits because we're empowered by our Constitution to vote them out. But every time I say that, I'm thinking, man, if we didn't have term limits on the American presidency, how many terms would we have voted Barack Obama in? How many terms would we have voted Daddy Bush in? Or actually, it would not have been Daddy Bush. It would have been Ronald Reagan, maybe to the point where Slick Willie Bill Clinton would never have made it, right? Or how many times would we have voted Bill Clinton in? Oh, I don't want to think that. Let me see what's else in the news for today. WalletHub has released their annual listing of best states to live in. And I, you know, WalletHub, it's an entertainment site. It's just something for, you know, me to talk about, you to talk about. And frankly, it's so comical that, you know, well, WalletHub says the best state to live in. You probably, wherever you're listening to right now, you might be in Pennsylvania, Illinois, Ohio, I don't know, Indiana, wherever you are. You say, I'm the best state. Well, actually, the midsection of the country gets pretty good representation. We had Minnesota, Idaho, among the top five. But number one, according to WalletHub, New Jersey. Look, I know it's the Garden State and all, and they've got like blueberry farms, and which I've never had a pleasure of seeing, but New Jersey, really, the best place to live based on, well, I'll give you education. They probably index really high when it comes to, you know, college degrees and college attendance. But number three, it's New Jersey, number one, Massachusetts, number two, New York was number three. New York, that's barely opening up from this COVID economy, this iron-fisted approach, shutting down and sending all sorts of business owners everywhere into bankruptcy. New York, based on affordability, yeah. New York affordable? I don't think so. This is why I was laughing at this WalletHub listing. New Jersey, number one. Massachusetts, number two. New York, number three. Based on affordability, ha! Education, the economy, double ha! listing places like New Mexico, Alaska, Louisiana at the bottom because of quality of life. New Mexico is beautiful. My goodness. Alaska is gorgeous. Quality of life. Oh, my goodness. Which reminded me of another study, the real study, the real numbers is where are people moving to in this country? And I can tell you, it's Florida and it's Texas. And the biggest proof of that, not only the rental truck numbers, those are the ones that are more believable, like the van lines, North American van lines, where they're renting trucks and moving stuff to. It's Texas and Florida. And a big hug and a kiss to all the family of WDBO country. Big Tony. And all the gang out there. Look, Texas, we beat all other states as far as number of people coming to Texas from California, coming from New York, from other places, other parts of the state. We just won two more congressional seats in the state of Texas. Now that's the real data. That's proof of the best states to live in, Texas and Florida. Or in this case, it'd probably be Florida and Texas. Because Florida's taking the lead on proper legislation these days. It's 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez. And if you want to join the conversation, 844-344-3262.
The weird, the unusual, and the hilarious. Check out Dana's Absurd Truth Podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez. It's always an honor to... You tune in, and thank you, Dana, for the call. I'll be with you this week. Dana will be back with us on Monday. And stick around. I got a conversation with one of my friends. He's a headhunter. David Cathy is his name. And if you think about it, with all the help wanted signs everywhere, right? Every American city, everywhere we see help wanted signs at these service sector jobs, restaurants, and all these stores, right? Tell you what, the unemployed, they snooze, they lose. I don't think there's ever been a better time. You think about it, I don't think there's ever been a better time for teen summer jobs, right? It's time to get your kids out of here. You got a couple of months, get your kids out. We'll send them out to go make some money this summer. And we'll be talking about that in a little bit. Meantime, the federal government making it easier for some families that might be eligible to get the advanced child tax credit. It's a check from, well, compliments of our future grandchildren, because it's all debt-based. The Treasury Department trying to reach out to, I kid you not, this is the title of the button that people apply for. Non-filer sign-up tool for individuals that might get a check from the federal government for the kids. It's called non-filer sign-up tool because it's for individuals who didn't file a tax return for 2019 or 2020. What does that say to you? Did not file equals did not pay taxes. So there you go. Our kids, checks for our kids, compliments of our future grandkids. Unless, of course, God forbid they get aborted. All right, Steve, well, let's do some headlines.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
The Centers for Disease Control putting a leash on certain dogs from entering our country. Health agency saying this temporary ban for some canines being imported from more than 100 countries because of a high risk for rabies. Well, so much for the so-called stimulus checks. Retail sales for the month of May disappointed people that are, you know, bean counters. They say the numbers did not reach what they expected for the month of May. You're listening to The Dana Show from her Southern Command in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. You can join the conversation at 844-344-3262.
Dana gives you the meat and potatoes news of the day. None of that tofu news. More like bacon with a side of hash browns news. The news you want, the way you want it. The Dana Show.
There's a novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Oh, you know who we could ask? The Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. The disease is the same name as the lab. That's just a little too weird, don't you think? And then they ask those scientists, they're like, how did this, so wait a minute, you work at the Wuhan respiratory coronavirus lab. How did this happen? And they're like, a pangolin kissed a turtle. And you're like, no, the name of your lab, if you look at the name, business card. Show me your business card. Oh, I work at the coronavirus lab in Wuhan. Oh, because there's a coronavirus loose in Wuhan. How did that happen? Maybe a bat flew into the cloaca of a turkey and then it sneezed into my chili and now we all have coronavirus.
And just like that, John Stewart has been banned from YouTube. Oh, that's right. Wait, now that we've changed the rules, now that Donald Trump's no longer at the White House, oh, now we can talk about the virology lab in Wuhan. Where's Wuhan? China. Talk about the China virus. And maybe, just maybe, after Dr. Fauci did everything he could to make sure, don't look over here, kids. There's nothing to see over here. You guys, it's natural, and we're going to discount. We have no proof on the natural side, and we got no proof on the lab side. But don't look at the lab side. No, it's natural. It's natural. Thank you, Dr. Fauci and amigos. This is The Dana Show. I'm Sergio Sanchez, The Dana Show. Reporting to you today from the Southern Command in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. So let me clear some other news. I got some good idea for you parents of teenagers. Time to get your kids out of the house. It's, you know, we're pretty much done. We're opening up California. Today's opening day for California. If you haven't heard, today, June 15th, is where pretty much all the COVID stuff is being flushed down the toilet. Disneyland is open. Legoland is open, California. You're from out of state. You can still go to Legoland, Disneyland, and whatever other park. The thing is, you still need to put in a reservation, though, because it's, well, you know, there's a big demand. So out-of-towners, out-of-state people, you guys need to put in a reservation. But COVID's gone, California. The distancing thing and the masking, no, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to worry about that in California. So we're opening up the world. Jobs everywhere. Jobs, jobs, jobs. So I'll be speaking with I'm going to share with you a conversation I had with a headhunter friend of mine. Good idea. Get the kids out of the house and go send them out to make some money. Meantime, this note from Washington. Republican Senator Steve Daines from Montana trying again to ban flag burning, put together an amendment to ban flag burning. Steve Daines reintroducing a constitutional amendment and trying to prohibit what he calls the physical desecration of the American flag. And he's tried this twice before, so this is, you know, swing, more than likely swing and miss number three for Steve Daines. Symbol of a liberty and a beacon of hope, the American flag. That's what he said. Yeah, it's a symbol. And let me emphasize the word symbol. Anytime I see stories like this, and trust me, I, as a citizen, and I love my country, I love liberty, the God-given liberty that we exercise in this country. And when it came to this foolish behavior from individuals in entertainment, whether it was throwing a ball in football or bouncing ball in basketball, whatever, wherever they came from, and they had a problem with police and law enforcement and calling police pigs and then branching off into petulant little protests on the sidelines because they're washed up quarterbacks or washed up athletes, and just sending us into a tailspin as a nation, dividing us even further, and doing all these protests every time that the American flag was acknowledged and we stood up, you know, at attention, put our hand over our hearts. We volunteered to do that. And I do not believe that we would be America if we somehow made it illegal for that expression of love, that expression of respect, for it to be illegal if you had a problem with that. Look, friend, that's not America. I think of Mexico, for example. I recall growing up as a boy in Mexico. It's illegal, like with real deal punishment written into Mexican legal code if you desecrate the Mexican flag. It is a symbol of our liberty, and no one can force you to love them. And if you do not love America, it's because you don't know America. You don't know anything else. You really don't know how good you have it in America. No one can force you to love them and loving and respecting our country and its symbols and its traditions. It's voluntary because you need to do the hard work of understanding how good you have it, how blessed you are to be an American citizen. I do not believe we need laws to make it illegal to, you know, desecrate the flag. It is part of America. It's an ugly part of it. We got our good and our bad, and we need to work on diminishing the bad by increasing the good, and that would be education, teaching our children. Learn liberty, practice it, teach it to your kids. Anyway, that's my point of view. Now, this interesting story I didn't get to yesterday from New Jersey. A school board up in New Jersey facing some pushback. They voted to remove the name of holidays from their academic calendar. I read this, and the first thing popped into my head, this is like the school district version of Dad. Well, you know, when we wouldn't shut up in the backseat, when Dad threatened to pull the car around, like, I'm going to do a U-turn. I'm going back home. You guys don't shut up. You kids don't shut up. Yeah, this is pretty much what the school district did. Randolph Township School Board said that instead of listing the names of national holidays that are, for some reason, offensive to some, religious holidays that not everyone can agree on. It's like 99% of everybody agrees. Yeah, thumbs up on the religious holiday, thumbs up on the national holiday, but there's always that small minority. Oh, I'm offended. I got my butt hurt because I'm offended by Thanksgiving and the pilgrims. I'm offended by Christmas because it has Christ in the name. Those Christians, I can't stand those people. So to appease everyone, everybody shut up. Dad at the school district, they turned the truck around. The school board said they're just going to remove references to the holidays, period. No more national holidays, no more religious holidays. So Thanksgiving, Christmas, Martin Luther King Day, all those, they will simply call it a day off on the calendar. How sad. Don't you think that's sad? That's so pathetic. This is what it's come to. We just to appease everyone. You can't make everyone happy. Believe me, as a talk show host for decades now, this is how we make our money. Some people get mad, more people get happy, and the happy people, and also some of the people who get mad, they come around eventually. They realize that everybody has a different point of view, different opinion. And they still go out and support our sponsors. Thank you very much for listening to The Dana Show. My goodness. Give you a word of warning. I got a gut-punching story. It's a heart-wrenching story, but I'm going to try to rinse with a happy story. But I need to share this because it's such a sad story out of Tennessee. And it is an example of how evil the slavery of drug addiction can be. From Portland, Tennessee. You guys in Tennessee probably familiar with the story of this young woman. Her name is Tiffany Spears. Police in Tennessee say that her baby, See, this woman, Tiffany Spears, she was addicted to methamphetamine and did other drugs. She did fentanyl, meth. She was addicted. She was a slave to that. Well, she had two kids, a three-year-old and a newborn. Long story short, Miss Tiffany did not survive a drug overdose and was not found for days. The three-year-old miraculously survived, but the three-year-old tried her best and provide water and food for the little baby that was strapped into a little seat. So anyway, just one of those water cooler conversations, or maybe a teachable moment as you talk to your kids about drug addiction. Just don't even try it. And a heartwarming story out of New York. A hero janitor, hero custodian, and a teenager forever connected after one amazing moment where this 15-year-old Avery Ward at the cafeteria started laughing with her friends and aspirated a French fry. Ooh, started choking. Kid turned purple. And the janitor, the custodian, Dave Cook, was nearby, saw this kid turning purple and sprung into action, did the Heimlich maneuver. He said he had just done the Heimlich maneuver on his seven-year-old son some days past. And where did he learn it? He learned it from a poster that had been put there at the school. That's how he learned. He never went to Red Cross first aid class. He just learned it from the poster. There you go. Got about 14 minutes left in the hour. Let me share with you a good idea for mom and dad. Get the teenagers out of the house. They need to go sop up some of those jobs that are available. Go ahead, Steve.
The business report says that teenagers are helping to fill the gap as a lot of service industries, restaurants, and other service providers, they've got the help wanted sign, and summer's here. You got a bunch of teens available, and they might be filling that gap as many workers are sitting on the sidelines still receiving extended federal unemployment benefits that are soon drying up. An expert in recruitment with one of the top recruiting companies in the nation, Unity Search Group, David Cathy. Dave.
Good, Sergio.
I got to ask you, how young can a teenager hit the workforce? 16, 15, 14? How young?
Well, there are some stipulations in there that they can actually be younger than 16. However, the population that we are really focused on is the 16 to 19-year-old teen population.
You know, the reason I ask you, my precious baby, he turned 14 this past weekend, and that was one of the first questions that he asked me. Dad, how old do I have to be to start working summer jobs? What are you talking, boy? Enjoy summer.
Well, I tell you, you know, what's really interesting is that we're seeing more teens have an appetite to get a summer job. And a lot of that is due to the fact that they've been locked up for a year and they want to make some cash and they just want to get out and see their friends and help people. And the other reason is parents saying, we got to get you out of the house because I've been locked up with you for a year and I need you out of here.
Well, so many companies that they have the help wanted sign, but yet millions of workers still sitting on the sideline and getting some extended benefits.
Yeah, it's been huge. It's really been huge, Sergio, specifically for the areas and the industries that were impacted most by the pandemic. This is where we're really seeing our teenage population, again, the 16 to 19-year-old, step up and take control. And they're being heavily incentivized by the businesses. I mean, you're seeing higher wages. They're getting bonuses. They're getting referral bonuses to refer their friends. They're getting much more flexibility. It's almost as if getting a summer job for a teen has become viral, just like everything else for a teen has become.
Any advice to HR?
Yeah, well, I think keeping in mind flexibility for these teens, because they do have other things going on. Some of them are trying to take some summer classes or some of them are involved in sports. But I really think this changes the landscape each summer as we move forward, because how do we go back now? Now we've raised the bar and teens are going to expect it. And business owners are probably going to have to make that shift, because how do you go back?
And anyone sitting on the sideline, you better get in there. Because these teens might be taking up those, right? They might be taking up some of those easy, low-hanging fruit when it comes to jobs this summer. And you might not have something available until August, maybe late August or September.
That's good advice, Sergio.
As they surrender those jobs. Thank you, Dave. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. You have a good one.
Hiring specialist David Cathy.
Thanks for tuning in. The Dana Show from her Southern Command in South Texas. I'm Sergio Sanchez.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others.
The Dana Show.
It's an honor to be in this week for my friend Dana Lash. I'm Sergio Sanchez. You're doing the Twitter thing or Facebook, Sergio Sanchez. Just look for the cystic fibrosis porthole there, the little circle thing. Something about cystic fibrosis. Sergio Sanchez. And on Twitter, it's at Sergio Talk. So in the Gulf of Mexico, there's supposed to be some tropical something-something that's supposed to brew over the next 48-plus hours. So I'm just going to watch it. Everybody on the Gulf Coast, Louisiana, all the way to Florida, you just kind of watch it. At the moment, they say if something does flare up, it'd probably be a rainmaker and might head over to Louisiana. Let me share with you a little bit of news from my neck of the woods, Rio Grande Valley of Texas. U.S.-Mexican border, the Southern Command for the Dana Show. Yeah, we're the front lines of news, people. I know you don't get to hear this news much, but it's out there. CBP, Customs Border Protection, Border Patrol, they have a good collection of daily press releases that they provide on what it's like. And they provide a portion, just a sample. See, the press releases are only a sample of what's taking place on a day-to-day basis. They obviously can't be putting all the different incidents in. They probably couldn't hire enough people to be writing that all the time. So this from here, my neck of the woods, local Border Patrol station, Rio Grande City, Roma area in Starr County. They apprehended 4 illegal immigrants, and they ran a background check at the station. Identified one guy as a sex offender, Pedro Asuncion Oriquispe, 43-year-old guy from Peru, a Peruvian national, previously removed from our country because he's a sex offender. His offense committed multiple counts of sexual abuse on a child up in Idaho. See, they don't stay around here. They go to the nation's interior. They go to the midsection up northeast. So just an example of one individual they caught. And again, like I've been stressing, because we've had an incredible uptick in illegal immigration, and mostly the Border Patrol is just distracted, taking care and processing individuals, family units, and kids who come on their own. They're distracted with that. And eventually, people like this guy normally would be able to escape Border Patrol and make it into the interior. How many guys like this guy made it into the interior? All right, Steve, well, let's do the day in stupidity, the audio of the day. What you got?
All right. Well, Joe Biden was in Switzerland, and he had to make a presentation for some Eastern European leaders. And I guess he tried to, but here we go.
And I've said before, and I apologize for repeating. Oh, I didn't like to take color. I'm going to take it from this security advisor. I'm leaving out a lot of people here. I apologize. I'm going to get in trouble. But anyway, we'll get back to that. But there's a lot that is.
Yeah, he tried.
Well, it's sad that we have to laugh. And as I laugh, you know, the guys in Europe, you know, Vladimir Putin's laughing at us as well. That's it for today's program. This is the Sergio Show from South Texas.